Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good afternoon. At the tone, Pacific Daylight Time will be...
It's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
One step closer to my own personal hell.
This is Primetime on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan.
We expect the best. We're not afraid to break someone. Do you hear me?
Primetime is your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports.
Go ahead and clap. Mediocrity deserves applause.
Isaac Rob.
I'm miserable. I had to get up at 10 o'clock this morning.
Jason Sakanic.
I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back. Rob and Soup, Tuesday. Hope you're having a good day. All that snow out there. So do you. Big Souk.
Looks quite nice right now. We got a little sunset.
No, we're covered in snow. Don't you see it?
Are we through the snow?
6 inches.
Fears.
Are we?
No.
I don't know.
They were saying that the chance of the bad event, the ice and snow, would be Wednesday night into Thursday, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Today was a chance of snow, and then...
So continue to fear.
The fear is more for 2 days from now.
Well, I'm waiting, because I was supposed to go down to Bend this weekend, but I got to wait and see what the pass is like.
Well, it's snowing a ton down there.
I know, so that's why I'm kind of waiting to see what it's like in the mountains, because that's a crappy drive if you have to make it at, 35 miles an hour.
Two new drops today. If you're just tuning in, we have Big Souk. With a nice little moo. For reference. And Dave Bartu is on. And we got this little nugget from Dave.
He is a 5-star douche magoo.
Douche magoo. He was talking about the old Notre Dame offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
That apparently no one wants to work with him. I guess he's got a Mike Martz sort of reputation.
5-star.
What does that say? Something like DJ DJ Durkin can get a job. Like, what kind of a-hole do you have to be where no one wants to hire you?
Ooh, this is exciting. This is two times in 1 hour.
What do you got?
This is breaking.
We're breaking more news?
Yeah.
This is a tweet from Brett McMurphy. Former Mississippi State coach Joe Moorhead expected to be the new OC at Oregon.
Oh, there we go. By the way, according to Dave Bartu...
Wait, is that a good thing?
Yeah, Dave said that was the 100% the right choice.
Joe Moorhead.
He was the number one guy.
Cool.
Yeah, he was the OC at Penn State before he took the job at Mississippi State and did a very, very nice job there with Trace McSorley and running back for the Giants, Saquon Barkley.
All right, well, look at all this sports news, man.
This is very,
isn't this
very,
fun?
Very sportsy.
Coming up next.
And by the way, if you're Oregon... I mean, you look at all the turnover you have next year in the Pac-12, and I know you've got some turnover too. You got a break in a new quarterback. You're breaking in four new offensive linemen, but you get the four guys back on a defensive squad that was very good this year. I mean, obviously you have to replace Troy Dye, but your secondary comes back, a big-time recruiting class. People feel pretty good about Shuck being the guy going forward, and you went out last year and made a huge hire at defensive coordinator, and we saw the benefits that had on your program. And now you went out and got what most people, including Dave, who this is what he does for a living, you got a hammer offensive coordinator. So I think if you're Oregon right now, I think you're pretty high on where you're at. You finished 5 in the final poll, and you're going to be a top 10 team going into next year.
Brother.
Unfortunately, you got Ohio State staring you in the face week 1, but next year could be a nice year for the Duckies.
All right, coming up, we're going to talk about Ed Orgeron winning a championship. I want you to think about that. Ed Orgeron just won a national championship.
And having a ham sandwich to celebrate.
Yeah, well, that's about right.
Let's say, what are you going to do, Ed? Yeah, he's going to go back to his suite and he's going to eat a ham sandwich.
That guy's so great.
He is.
All right.
And I'm glad you didn't have that raffle of Salafusha wouldn't have ever got past number 1. Anyway.
And the fact that he's the coach at LS freaking U. That man loves Louisiana, and Louisiana loves him. It's a perfect marriage. And think that he wasn't good enough for USC.
And more on this Major League Baseball cheating scandal. More fallout from that today. Tonight in the club, we talk about Meatloaf falling, and we want to free the nipple.
Oh yeah, on Instagram.
Did you see Meatloaf fall?
No, like the singer.
Yeah,
he's Meatloaf?
Yeah. Well, Yeah, no, it wasn't a meatloaf that fell. I don't know why that would be a headline.
I don't know. Maybe it was a delicious. Can you imagine putting together a delicious meatloaf? Maybe there was some cheese in the middle of it and then it falls.
Maybe it was one of those most expensive foods at like a Vegas restaurant covered in gold leaf and it fell on the ground.
I'll tell you, you're.
I don't like meatloaf.
Well, look, no one really likes meatloaf. No one orders meatloaf as a choice, but occasionally you do end up with a good meatloaf. And when you do, you can say, Ma, the meatloaf!
Meatloaf can be very tasty.
Why does
yes.
it exist?
Well,
because it can be very tasty.
It can be very tasty. My mom makes a pretty solid meatloaf.
Yeah, I'm not denying any of that, but why does it exist? There's way better ways to do meat. It's like, I feel like it's the only, it's there only to make other meat look good.
Well, it's a new meat delivery.
It's like a fluffer.
It's a meat delivery system, and there are many of those. I mean, you can't.
I feel like people were bored and were like, let's make it as big as we can.
Let's make a loaf.
Just make it like bread.
But you tell me, see, you don't cook, but maybe Mike, it's the same thing if you're getting a takeout pizza. There is no more, outside of like a major, you know, a major life event, but you tell me there's something more just devastating that when you're hungry and you've got your delicious meatloaf or pizza or whatever and you drop it.
Oh.
And you just, God. Like, you can just see it tumbling out of your hands and you're like, oh, no.
I'd still eat it.
You would pick up the loaf?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah,
I ain't wasting that.
That's a risk.
I'll be fine.
That says a lot about you.
And
Rob.
Some food you can't pick up, like Chinese food or something. Spaghetti.
Yeah, no, that's
there's
different.
No recovering from that.
But a full like pizza pie? Come on.
I've had it before where I've like made a nice little fried egg and I'm transferring it over with like a spatula to put onto the sandwich or put wherever I'm eating it.
Yeah.
And it slips off the spatula and lands on the ground, and you're like, I just put all this effort, not all this effort, but I just put some effort into making this really nice fried egg, and the yolk is ready to run when it lands, and now it's on the ground, and the yolk is on the ground, and now I have to clean it.
And the hard part is for, like, at my house is anytime you have food or you're cooking in the kitchen, you don't have time if it falls to the ground because you know what's happening. There's lurking bodies just milling around. The two bulldogs at any given time are just waiting. They're like velociraptors. They're just waiting. Even if you don't see them, they can sense when something has been dropped, and you literally have half a second before you have a combined like 190 pounds of fat bulldog that just descend upon the loaf or whatever it is. And then at that point, it's unrecoverable.
Do your bulldogs have just cameras set up filming the floor?
I'm convinced.
Whatever room that they're in.
They could be upstairs and you can drop something, and they're the slowest things ever. They're just, they look, especially the little guy, he's like a baked bean, but he moves at lightning speed. I think he senses that it's falling, and by the time it hits the ground, he's there. It's unbelievable.
Meatloaf is a douche.
Yes, he is.
Oh, wait. Well, yeah, he is too.
He is.
But so is meatloaf.
The food,
they're both douches.
The food and the person. I don't like your hot meatloaf take.
I don't like meatloaf. All right, we got to get to the hot five at five, I think.
Hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, golly, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
That's hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 on primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
The Hot 5 at 5. Refreshed on the fan by Frostbrewed Coors Light.
The tournament is
likely not going to get nowhere.
I can't do that. Good.
Number 5.
Antonio Gates has retired.
Finally. I feel like he's retired 9 different times. Like, did anyone know that he was still around?
Yeah. I kind of didn't.
He's just... And he's kind of a fat, bloated version of himself, but in his prime, Antonio Gates is one of the 3 or 4 best to ever do it.
Chargers tight end.
That guy was amazing.
He leaves with the most touchdowns for a tight end ever, 116.
Yep. And remember, he didn't even play. He was a basketball player, I think, at Kent State.
That's right. He wasn't a football guy, was he?
He wasn't a football guy.
He also finishes 3rd in yards for tight ends all time with close to 12,000.
Yeah.
And he was 3rd in catches, too.
Antonio
Gates was a force.
Was fantastic.
He was like one of those. He was like one of the first guys that created the whole tight end matchup nightmare type thing. Tony Gonzalez, him.
They were the kind of the modern.
Yeah.
I don't know what you want. Shannon Sharp, you could throw in there, too. They were guys that modernized the position. And Gates was a beast. And people forget
Number
how good. Four. Those Charger teams were with LT and Gates and Rivers and and Jammer. And I mean, one year they had 11 Pro Bowlers.
More trouble at Penn State. There's a federal lawsuit filed by a former football player by the name of Isaiah Humphries, alleges hazing. The lawsuit's aimed at the university, the head coach James Franklin, and former teammate Damian Barber. In the suit, it is alleged that Barber and others claim they were going to, quote, Sandusky, end quote.
Yeah.
The underclassmen, I think you all know what that means.
There was a lot of, like, stripping of clothes, placing genitals on people's bodies.
The actions included wrestling underclassmen to the ground while maintaining restraint, simulating a humping action, wrestling underclassmen to the ground while another participant places genitals on the face of underclassmen, and even instances of the participants placing their genitals on the buttocks of the alleged victims, stroking their genitalia.
Yeah, it's...
I'm sorry I had to read that to
you. It's all bad, but at the same time, I believe every word of it because...
And James Franklin apparently knew about it and did nothing.
I hate to
say
that.
And then actually punished the guy for reporting it by putting him into no-win drills.
Every one of the things has either been done to me, I've seen done in some shape or form. It's just, it's horrible. But there was... I would like to think that we've evolved past that, but...
We have not.
We have not.
Red Sox have fired manager Alex Cora today. This is due to his involvement in the sign-stealing scandal that just punished the Astros.
And his punishment still hasn't come down from Major League Baseball. They just were proactive about it, the Red Sox were.
Well, the Red Sox went to MLB and said, hey, what are you going to do to Alex? And they're like, oh, yeah, we should probably fire him. But, yeah, the Major League Baseball is still withholding what they're going to do to Alex Cora until the Red Sox investigation is over. But Boston being proactive, they have fired Alex Cora. Also today, Twins signed free agent third baseman Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, who I can't stand, but, hell of a career. He's like one of those universes. Does anyone like him?
No.
I thought he was kind of toast, but then he came back for Atlanta and was pretty good.
Yeah, he was good.
He is a douche McGinn.
He is like all teammates hate him. He's like Jeff Kent.
He's like Meatloaf.
Again, you with the Meatloaf. I understand that you don't like Meatloaf, but you're hardline anti-Meatloaf.
No, the singer. I'm talking about the singer.
Ah, then we're fine.
He's a douche.
I do like that I'll Do Anything for Love, but I won't do that song.
Nick Rolovich is the new head football coach at Washington State. The Cougs' new coach. He comes from Hawaii. He went 28-27 in four seasons there. He was previously offensive coordinator at Nevada. He took his team to three Hawaii Bowls, going 2-1 in those games. This past season, they were quite good. They were 10-5 with a top 20 scoring offense. He will get a five-year deal worth $3 million. He's only 40 years old, and his offense, they say, is quite similar to what Mike Leach was running.
So you don't have to worry about like a personnel changeover. He's a young guy. He's he's an active recruiter. This is just a great hire for Washington State. I mean, obviously, Mike Leach leaving, no one wants to see that. But Gideon Rolovich, I think this is a real nice get for Washington State to try to minimize the damage.
Yeah. Come too far together. Stop now.
Number one.
My number one fan.
Number one.
Number one.
And number one today is that Brett McMurphy of the Stadium.
Stadium?
That's who he works for.
It's called Stadium, I think.
It's called Stadium. Right, yeah, he's a college football insider. He used to be with ESPN, but then he was unemployed. And
isn't that where Shams is now, too? Stadium?
Is that what it? Yeah, I've heard of it. Stadium Network? I don't know. Anyway, that's where he works. And, he is reporting that Mississippi State coach, recently fired by Mississippi State, Joe Moorhead, will be the new offensive coordinator at Oregon.
Yeah, and he was the OC at Penn State with Trace McSorley and Saquon Barkley. And, you know, we just had Dave Bartu on that was talking about the Rolovich hire. And when we had Dave on like a week ago, Dave said that of the candidates out there, that Moorhead was the slam dunk hire, that he would, that was the number one choice. So he interviewed, actually not too long ago at Oregon. I think it was earlier this week they said that they were meeting together. So if this is the hire, and it appears to be, I think it's another great gig. This is 2 years in a row now where I think you've made hammer coordinator hires if you're Mario Cristobal.
Let's come back after the break and talk a little bit more about what we know about Joe Moorhead. And then we'll get into last night's LSU domination and Ed Orgeron and what USC boosters are saying about him. But the Hot 5 at 5 is refreshed by Coors Light. Enter to win tickets to a Blazers home game and a $250 gift card to the team store wherever you buy your Coors Light. Coors Light! Made to chill. All right, we'll be right back. 518 on the Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, it looks like, according to Brett McMurphy of Stadium Network, Oregon has settled on Joe Moorhead, the former Mississippi State head coach who was just fired a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, which is weird because he won the Egg Bowl and apparently everything was fine. They went to the bowl game and then for whatever reason it kind of fell apart. But he was a rising star. He went from being at Akron and then he was the offensive coordinator at Connecticut. Remember the year they won 10 games and went to the Fiesta Bowl?
I do remember that year. Uh-huh. That was him?
Yeah, that was him.
He was the OC. By the way, he's going to be Oregon's new OC.
And then he went to Fordham, which is where he played. And he took Fordham from like one of the worst teams in their conference, and they won 10 games in his second year.
Yeah, he was 38-13 at Fordham.
Yep, and it was a phenomenal job, and they viewed him as like the guy. He was the up and coming guy, and then he goes to Penn State, and he's there for 2 years, and they break all kinds of records there at Penn State, and the offense is phenomenal. That was the year they went to the Rose Bowl with McSorley and Saquon Barkley. And a lot of people had him as the biggest rising star in college football. And then he ended up at Mississippi State and was there for 2 years. And, that didn't quite work out. Now I think Oregon's getting, I think this is the second year in a row that you have made a major upgrade at your coordinator with Avalos and now with Moorhead. And for Cristobal, he's a CEO type of guy. It's like Ogeron is. And there's a lot of guys that are out there like this. And one of the biggest things that he will continue to have to do if he wants to keep this program moving forward is exactly this, because when you have success, you're going to get your coaching staff pilfered. And, if Avalos continues to have success, or if Moorhead comes in here and leads a new offense and they light it up, Moorhead will have another job within 2 or 3 years. And so you have to continue to make these hires. But I love the fact that these are, like, you look at what Washington did hiring the guy from Jacksonville.
Donovan.
Yeah, like, why? Like that makes no sense. Like no track record there. A guy that wasn't even calling plays in the NFL. Whereas here with both Avalos and now Moorhead, you have guys with proven results. These are just, to me, these are no brainer hires.
Yeah, there is a connection. So it's interesting. Washington hired, is it John Donovan? The Jags.
Yeah, the Jags.
He was like running backs coach for the Jags.
Yeah.
John.
But he was
Donovan's last. I'm going to find out what his. Yeah, it's John Donovan.
John Donovan. He was formerly the OC at Penn State. Here's what's interesting. So John Donovan was the OC at Penn State, and their offense struggled.
Yes.
And I don't remember if he left or they let him go, but do you know who replaced him as the offensive coordinator at Penn
Joe
State? Joe Moorhead.
And the offense immediately took off.
The offense went into the top 20, and then he was only there for a year before he was a head coach at Mississippi State. He went 14-12 there. First year he was 8-5. They lost the Outback Bowl. This past year he was just 6-7. They lost the Music City Bowl. I'm not sure why they fired him. I know they said that
there was some off-field stuff
with some kids. Who knows? But he's obviously well respected, a very good offensive coordinator. And so Oregon, it's interesting because this guy was, I just looked it up. He was fired on the 3rd of January. Mm-hmm. And Oregon's been looking for an offensive coordinator since before that. So this, it's kind of goes to show you, just take your time. You never know. I mean, I feel like more coordinators and coaching moves are happening later than normal. Like the Mike Leach thing was late to me. And the Joe Moorhead thing was late because it was after recruiting and everything. And so I don't know why that is, why it's happening. It seems to be that coaching changes are happening later and later, but it pays to take your time. You don't have to rush. And I think Oregon got rewarded by getting the best guy out there in Moorhead, at least on paper, mm-hmm. by just waiting and definitely doing your due diligence and saying, well, if this guy's not quite right, let's see what else comes up over the next couple weeks. And lo and behold, Joe Moorhead, a guy who wasn't there when you started the search, pops up, you interview him, and he ends up being your guy.
I think you got a lot better today. No offense to Arroyo.
Offense to Arroyo.
I just think you got a lot better. I really do. I think your program got a lot better today with Joe Moorhead as opposed to Marcus Arroyo as your offensive coordinator. And I would encourage everyone to just take a deep breath. I do think there could be some growing pains. Now, I don't know what the Pac-12 necessarily is going to be next year. There's so much turnover, and I don't know how many, elite programs there are going to be. And Oregon's going to have to deal with this. Now, the defense should be lights out. There's no excuse. This defense should be really, really good, and you've got a good recruiting class coming in again. But it may take some time with a brand-new offensive line minus, Penei Sewell, who's back and best offensive lineman in the country. But And then breaking in Chuck, we're assuming it's going to be him, even with Moorhead. And then you open with Ohio State. I would just encourage everyone, to, if it's not like gangbusters out of the door here, just everyone take a deep breath. There may be some mild regression as you work in some new offensive guys.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, too, it's like, I don't know, Penn State. So I'm looking here. Penn State's offense averaged 335 yards per game in 2014. And 348 yards per game in 2015. Not very good. But then he came in 2016 and it improved to 432 yards per game.
Yeah.
But he also had Saquon Barkley.
And Trace McSorley.
So you never know. Like, I know people are panning the John Donovan move and loving this one. But, you know, everybody was all over LSU for hiring Ed Orgeron. How'd that work out?
Yeah.
Like, and then the Joe Brady thing, getting Joe Brady from the Saints.
Yeah,
like,
did anyone know that was going to lead to arguably the greatest college football season of all time?
Do you remember when Oregon hired Chip Kelly? It's like, what?
New Hampshire.
It's just, you just never know. But on paper, and particularly with head coaching experience, Joe Moorhead looks like a really good hire. So it'll be interesting to see how he and Cristobal jive, you know?
Yep.
And how... Because somebody said his Moorhead's offense is really slow and boring.
Well, but again, I don't think
that's probably what Cristobal likes.
I think we all know that Cristobal hasn't necessarily been a guy that wants to spread it out and go five wide and sling it all over the field.
All right. Well, when we come back,
speaking of five wide and slinging out over the field, talk about LSU.
Ed Orgeron and what USC booster is saying about him and the state of USC football next. Here's Mike.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Well, how about those LSU Tigers last night?
They proved me wrong.
You doubted them.
Cost me a bunch of money, too.
You called them, what'd you call them, pretenders?
I just thought that their lack of defense...
He called them frauds.
...was eventually going to come back and bite them.
Frauds.
Bite them in the ass. I thought Ohio State and Clemson were frauds. More complete teams.
Fraud. Like, that is the least fraudulent team of all time. They beat seven teams in the top 10.
We had the conversation of best team in college football history.
Best season, for sure.
And you said, frauds. I can't really think of any better right now. Just 2 weeks ago, you said they were frauds.
They sort of backdoored their way into this title, didn't they, Jace?
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, I mean, honestly, that was really impressive. Like, you look at what LSU did, and normally we've talked about it when top five defenses play top five offenses. That's happened five times in title games. The defense has always come out on top, and maybe Clemson was skewed by the fact that they didn't play anyone in the ACC. I just thought Ohio State and Clemson were complete teams, and LSU wasn't, and LSU's offense would be slowed down. And for the first quarter, honestly, I was sitting there on the couch being like, well, this is what I thought, right? You're going to get out coached and it's a complete team and you're down by two scores and Burrow didn't look comfortable and they were confusing him. And then LSU figured it out. And once they did, there was a switch that was flipped and boy, they just never let up. I mean, they made Clemson look slow. They made them look unathletic. Trevor Lawrence had about the worst game you could play. And Joe Burrow just probably capped off what is the greatest single season in college football history with what 60 touchdown passes, six picks, and torched his four biggest opponents. You look at what they did against Alabama, what they did against Georgia, what they did against Oklahoma, and what they did against Clemson. I mean, those are all top five teams, and their offense absolutely dominated those games. And then their defense stepped up when they needed it to. The defense played good against Oklahoma, and the defense played well against Clemson. So, hats off to LSU. I did not think that they were the complete team what they were, but at this point, there's nothing you can do but say that that's one of the greatest seasons in college football history.
This is breaking.
We have more?
When it rains, it pours, bro.
And it's just today. Carolina Panthers linebacker Luke Kuechly announces his retirement.
Whoa!
At the age of 28.
Wow. Concussions?
I haven't watched the video yet. I just saw it pop across. He has a video, like a four-minute video.
Holy crap.
The quote that the Panthers put on top of it says, "In my heart, I know it's the right thing to do."
Man.
I wonder how much that...
It's got to be.
It's got to be, right?
Because he suffered, what, two more this year and he has a history of them?
Yeah, he's got a history of them. This has to be a concussion-related thing where he's still battling with this.
By the way, I forgot to tell you guys in the Hot 5 at 5.
Yeah.
There's so much news today that I forgot to even throw this in there, but Joe Brady has already left LSU. He's going to be the OC at Carolina. I totally forgot about that.
And this is the problem that when you're really successful is people come and pilfer your guys. Go ask Nick Saban about it.
Yeah, and Moorhead could be out of here in a couple years,
sure.
But whatever. Hopefully it's a couple good years.
Yeah.
And then you start the process all over again. Well, Ed Orgeron is a college football playoff champion. And who would have thought that after the whole thing at Ole Miss and USC?
Well,
you know?
He wasn't good enough at USC, right? He flamed out at Ole Miss and apparently had a huge falling out with the boosters. And quite frankly, he was made fun of when LSU hired him. People weren't happy about it. And it's not like last year that LSU was great or anything. And there were people that were already questioning after a year. And now, you know, this.
Pretty awesome. So there's this guy by the name of Brian Kennedy. He's a big USC booster. Mm-hmm. And I guess he'd been going to USC games since 1949, and LA Times did a write-up on him, but he owns a billboard company in LA, and they said that when USC needed a second practice field, and they needed it quickly, I don't know what year this was, but it was one of the years Orgeron was there. This guy, Brian Kennedy, stepped up and built it for USC. So his name is on a practice field at USC. And he said the only coach who was there who actually thanked him for stepping up in kind of a pinch was Orgeron. And at that time, Orgeron was just the defensive line coach. So long story short, they became friends. I guess Orgeron was a really nice guy, and he and Kennedy became buddies. And so after he went 6-2 as the interim coach at USC, Kennedy, a big booster at USC, name on a practice field, told Pat Hayden, their AD, said, you need to strongly consider hiring this guy, Orgeron. Well, Hayden didn't. And then, you know, you remember who they hired.
That wasn't the guy they have now. That's not Helton, right?
No, you're missing one. Because they fired Kiffin on the tarmac. Orgeron took over, went 6-2. They did not hire him. Was they brought
Sark?
In.
Was that Sark?
Steve Sarkisian.
Steve Sarkisian, yeah.
So then after Sark got fired, because the whole thing with him blew up within a couple of years, Kennedy urges Hayden to hire Orgeron again. And Hayden did not listen to him. So then he says Lynn Swann came in as AD because Hayden got let go. And he said that's the point where it's like they totally phased him out. Like this Kennedy guy, this is a booster that you know, stepped up and paid for their second practice field. And he said he was just completely phased out. And he said that once Mike Bone, the new athletic director at USC, got the job. So you're spanning several years here where they basically just alienate the guy. He said Bone hasn't called him. So this guy's name is on a practice field at USC, and he was in LSU's coach's box for the title game. Like, what does that tell you about the state of things at USC?
How dysfunctional it is at USC. And you just finished with the worst recruiting class in the Pac-12.
And they asked him about it because he's been in the – he's not shy. Now he's, like, taken to the media to just blast USC, and he loves USC.
Yeah.
And they asked him, they said, what is the state of USC football? He said he's never seen it worse, and he called it dog blank.
Yeah.
And so
meanwhile, Coach O is rolling down there at LSU and is winning national championships.
And he's like, hell, I might as well just be an LSU fan. Like, this is how you're going to treat me.
I'm sure LSU would welcome the second practice field. Although something tells me LSU doesn't need a second practice field.
But how many teams is this there? It can't have ever happened where a team had a future national championship coach as their interim coach and did not hire him.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's no way that's happened.
Although, to be fair, I don't think anyone saw this coming from Coach O.
No, but you know what, though? Players loved him.
Yep.
He's always been known as a hammer recruiter, and he's a little squirrely. You know, he's a little odd. And
I think that was the thing.
I feel like
USC has always had this idea that you have to have this very presentable.
Not as polished. He wasn't as polished, and maybe, well, first of all, he fits at LSU. I mean, he's a Louisiana guy, and it kind of fits what they've got going on. But like I said, he went 6-2 at USC after it was a dumpster fire with Kiffin. He turned it around.
The players loved him.
And he's a great recruiter, and yet they go out and hire Sark without even vetting. Everybody knew. Talk to anybody at Washington.
That there were problems.
That Steve Sarkisian had a bit of a booze problem. And they didn't vet any of that. They didn't vet his personal habits. They hired that guy.
They just wanted the Pete Carroll. They've been chasing Pete Carroll ever since he left to come back up to Seattle.
I mean, Pat Hayden, low key bad. Yeah.
And same thing with Lynn Swann. Look, when you and maybe now with Bone in there, maybe you actually have a real AD. But
the Bone.
I mean, that's what happens when you have poor leadership from top to bottom. I mean, it's just it's. it's almost impossible to succeed when you have that sort of dysfunction at the top.
You know what, though? I think the thing about Orgeron, and like I said, he fits LSU quite well, guy. That's maybe more of a fit hire.
Did you see last night when he was being interviewed that he just talked about representing the great state of Louisiana?
Right.
But remember, such a cool moment.
He was coach at Ole Miss, and it didn't work.
No.
So,
well, again, because he alienated boosters because he didn't like the fact that they had to buy all the players. Isn't that great that was his downfall at Ole Miss, is that he wouldn't kiss ass to the boosters so they stopped paying players?
Yeah. Well, that LSU job is special. Yeah, I mean, they've had three national titles in 15 years with three different coaches.
Sure.
I mean, it's easier at LSU than it is at Ole Miss. Yeah. But, you know, how happy are they? Tom Herman didn't take that job. Remember, Tom Herman was their first choice. Orgeron was not their first choice.
Good for Orgeron for realizing that, you know, he needed to adapt, right? Burrow was there last year and they weren't that good. And he realized that this offense had to get modernized. And there was a great story about how they brought in Brady just to kind of be like a consultant and work on some RPOs. And they didn't let him leave the building. They're like, no. Like, we're doing this. And they completely revamped their offense. There's a great article, if you go to Pro Football Focus, the college edition of it, has a real detailed breakdown about how LSU's offense went from just very average last year to arguably the greatest offense we've ever seen in college football.
I think that Orgeron gives Mario Cristobal, they kind of have the same, they're kind of cut from the same cloth. Like, I feel like we've been around enough coaches going to Pac-12 Media Day and, you know, interviewing all these guys and stuff. The one thing that I keep going back to that really works for head coaches, because these guys all know football, is if they're genuine. And when you're genuine and you realize that maybe you need a more X's and O's-y, dorky Joe Brady type guy to help you, if you don't have that ego of, it's my way or the highway and I'm going to control this and I'm good at this and I'm good at everything, if you can delegate, if you're genuine as a leader, guys, you get, first of all, that makes you a good recruiter because kids love that.
Sure.
And then you can lead them the way Cristobal does and at the energy of Orgeron and Cristobal. I see a lot of similarities, but I think Cristobal's smart enough to realize that he needs better coordinators around him on the X's and O's side, and he's upgraded both of those in the last couple of years. And I'm not saying Oregon's going to rattle off a championship now, but I do think there's a formula there with, you just get a genuine leader, a guy that can recruit, that gets kids, the kids want to play for, to build the culture, and then you bring in the X's and O's guys to you know, on the side, and that's a really strong way to go about building your program.
It's what you're talking about is culture, right? Building culture. And Saban has built it, and Orgeron has built it, Cristobal has built it.
I just feel like for so long, you had to find the guy that had it all.
Yeah.
And what these guys are showing is you don't necessarily have to have it all. You do have to have some key components of being a great leader and building that culture, but you can fill in the gaps elsewhere with really smart football guys. Like who the hell is Joe Brady? He was a 28-year-old assistant to an assistant with the Saints, and he transformed a notoriously horrible offense. Right,
with RPOs and
it wasn't
it out.
Orgeron. The only thing Orgeron did was
hire him.
Be smart enough to realize he needed to go find Joe Brady. Yeah. And I think Cristobal has a little bit of that, which I think is really good, because just a couple of years ago on this show, we were sitting debating, does Cristobal have too big of an ego to realize that maybe he needs to upgrade here or there?
The answer to that is no.
The answer is no. He realizes it, and he just hired Moorhead.
And now all you got to do is go find your Jamar Chase, and you've got to find your Jeffersons and the Mosses, and because
They're recruiting, though.
They are. But you did see when you were watching LSU, and Clemson for that matter, and you saw this when Ohio State played, even a difference with Oklahoma, you just saw the level of talent and speed and athleticism with Etienne and Higgins. I mean, granted, LSU ended up blowing them out, and LSU was just that much better than Clemson. But, I mean, that was a three-point game in the third quarter. There is so much talent and so much speed. That was such a fun game to watch for the first 2.5 quarters, and the pace in which those guys were playing and just the hits and how good Burrow looked. It was really, really impressive. And then LSU just put their foot on the gas and Clemson didn't have an answer for it.
All right. Coming up next, let's take a look at this cheating scandal in baseball. 548 on the Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Okay, well, we're going to call an audible here.
Razor, Razor. Hold on, what was it? Yellow Weasel.
Yellow Weasel, right?
Yellow Weasel. Except Yellow Weasel went for like 2 yards.
Yellow Weasel.
Yeah, you could tell that the Seahawks knew what was coming.
The Seahawks knew all about what that Yellow Weasel.
They put their hand up and were like, Yellow Weasel.
Next time you got to run Red Weasel. Come on.
So we'll have to get to the Major League Baseball sign-stealing scandal tomorrow. There's a lot to unpack there. A lot of people are asking, like, why is that even a big deal? We'll get to that tomorrow.
Isn't that baffling, though, that I don't know. Yeah. We'll talk about it, but that isn't registering with people.
Yeah, it really isn't.
Jeez.
It's interesting. So we'll get to that tomorrow. Just watch the Luke Kuechly video.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, Carolina Panthers linebacker Luke Kuechly just retired, and he'd been there 8 years, and he posted like about a 3.5-minute video, and you know a lot of it's just different stuff about memories and thanking people, but he did say he wants to play fast, physical, and strong, but he can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And he said, I want to keep playing, but he knows that it's not the right decision.
And I think that boils down to one thing, and we all know, and that's just the head injuries, right? It wouldn't shock me if he's feeling the effects of that. I mean, I've heard so many people that have battled this that talk about just the general fog that won't lift and the headaches and some of the memory loss that you can have. And I'm sure now with the science we have in neurological tests, that this was not something that was just taken kind of willy-nilly. And he is someone that has had some really, really scary, battles with this over the years. He's 28 years old. I mean, think about this.
Jeez.
If you want to talk about just the modern game of football.
He is so, so good.
He is. The two best inside linebackers of the last 20 years, neither one of them made it to 30. And you're talking about Patrick Willis, and you're talking about Luke Kuechly.
Patrick Willis.
They were the two best inside linebackers of the last 20 years, and neither one of them made it to the age of 30 in the NFL. And it's just, there's just certain positions that just lend themselves to this sort of violence. And then some people obviously are more prone to injury or, concussions than others, or they just have rotten luck. And, you know, I think it's a bold move for both of these guys to step away. And I think it's easier with the money. Luke Kuechly made $63 million in 8 years. And I'm not saying that, you know, it's that there's a correlation between money and retiring, but I do think back in the day, because Junior Seau made as much money as you could ever make, and yet he couldn't walk away from it. He just loved the game that much and was willing to go through it. Although I don't think we had the same information what we do now, but you've got a lot of these guys that, you know, they're 28, 29 years old and they're feeling these effects and they don't have to keep playing, right? Their family and their kids' family, that's set. That's generational money. And I do think that maybe there is an element of that that makes it slightly easier to walk away despite the passion and the love for the game, knowing that you've provided for your family. Oh, and by the way, you know, we just saw Andrew Luck do this.
Yep.
Not for concussions, but Andrew Luck walk away because he was tired of hurting.
Yeah, your point about the money is right. I mean, come on. You know, when you get your health report or you're assessing things at the age of 28, it certainly helps when you look at your bank account and you have $60 million.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
Kuechly is the only defensive player in the NFL selected to the Pro Bowl in each of the last 7 seasons.
I mean, there's no
really good every year.
You can't question his greatness. You can't. He is. To me, he's in the Hall of Fame. I know 8 years is a short career, but that's not even
a Hall of Famer.
It's not even a question. He's in the Hall of Fame. Like I said, to me, him and Patrick Willis, two best inside linebackers last 20 years.
All right. Coming up next, let's, in honor of our buddy Coach O.
And I'm glad you didn't have that Rafa Salafusha wouldn't ever got past number one. Anyway.
What?
I couldn't get enough of him last night just doing
great.
Different interviews.
He's great.
Did you notice they didn't give him the Gatorade bath?
Yeah, they did.
I didn't see it.
I didn't see it either.
I think he was. No, I think he was dry.
No, I think they did.
Because I was watching all the post games.
The post game interview.
He was dry.
Next
was
to Tom Rinaldi, he was dry.
He was dry.
And also very, very flat. He was not very excited in the interview. I was very curious about that.
Yeah, it was weird. But I was like, why didn't they give him the bath?
He was probably hungry.
He did go and say to Scott Van Pelt that Scott's like, you're in New Orleans, Burma. How are you celebrating? He's like, well, I got a suite at the hotel with my family. I'm going to get a ham sandwich. Ed's partying to the break of 12:15 with a ham sandwich.
That's what you eat in New Orleans, a ham sandwich.
I guess, really? Like, that's how you celebrate?
So in honor of them, what is the difference between Cajun and Creole? We'll talk about that to kick off the club next on The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.